All right, we are back in this elder class, and we're continuing the conversation of what the New Testament has painted as who are elders and what are they doing.
Okay, we've looked at some things like above reproach, husband of one wife, or faithful to spouse. That's something we haven't talked about, but in some traditions only men can be the elders, and others men and women can be elders. Temperate, we're going to get to that one in a minute. Self-control, we talked about that, and respectable. When we go on, we find the next one is an interesting one. It says hospitable.
Yeah, and I think that question right there is really kind of huge, that the spiritual gift is something that people can be, and the role of being hospitable.
Right, right. Now, if you look at the spiritual gift, and you know who these people are in your church, I suspect, because they are the ones here, some person described it. You know, they provide an open home and a warm welcome to those in need of food, lodging, and fellowship, love to entertain, create a safe and comfortable setting where relationships can develop, meet new people, help them feel welcome. People with this gift ought to make up the core of greeters or receptionists at the door of the church on the Sabbath morning, etc. That's how one person described it. But you know, there are just people who love to invite people into their homes, who love to invite people into their lives. And they don't care whether the place is clean. So if we have to be hospitable in that regard to be an elder, we're in deep trouble, most of us. Now, there'll likely be some on a group of elders that have this, but when we talk about a role of being hospitable, that even if you don't have the spiritual gift, you can still reflect an attitude of welcome, of hope. In fact, that's the way I put it in the next one. That so you're not a recluse. The person who doesn't like people.
Right. If you don't really want to talk to people, you don't want to work with people, you probably shouldn't be an elder.
Right. That's not who an elder should be. And so when you're looking for an elder, perhaps in your church, or maybe you are considering being an elder, what does your personality say there? You know, when you meet people, do you run from people? Do you avoid people? Eldership ultimately is a people job.
Right.
So that's got to impact how you look at what you do. The next one on my list is able to teach. And again, you'll notice put at the bottom gift versus role again. Some people are gifted in teaching. This is their spiritual gift. And these are the people that you want teaching in whatever Sunday school you've got, adult education. You want people who have spiritual gift to be able to communicate information in a way that it is taken in and applied to individuals' lives. That's a broad definition of it. But again, if you're not gifted in it, can you still do it? Can you play a role when needed? The church I grew up in, elders were supposed to be the ones who did all the teaching in the called the catechism classes, and some of them were not gifted, let's put it that way. But some of them I listened to and learned from because of who they were, One short story. When I was in elementary school, we had a skating party after school. I had bought some new skates, and I was skating in the skating party. And then I had to walk home. My father worked second shifts in a local factory. My mother taught piano, going to people's houses after school, so they weren't able to give me a ride home. And so I walked like 3.5 miles home. That day, for some reason, I got lost, and I ended up, finally, I figured out where I was and where I had to go. I had to cut across these fields, farmer's fields. They were called the muck fields because they were black dirt that was left there.
Lovely.
And it was winter, so I'm on the snow, but because the snow was so deep, I didn't know where there was this big creek that was... I fell in.
It's getting worse and worse.
So you're right. Yeah, so I'm this little kid, and what do? I can't get out. I'm trying to climb out, and I can't get out. So I started yelling, and who should come? I was on the property of one of the elders of my church. Mm-hmm. And he hauled me out and brought me over to his barn. I was full of mud, of course, anyway, he ended up calling my mother, who came and got me and went home. That man ended up teaching in one of the classes I had to take. And he wasn't a great teacher as far as conveying information, but I listened to him because I knew him.
He saved your life.
So, yes, so able to teach doesn't mean, boy, you're the most gifted teacher ever. It means that there are situations you're going to have to step into, and people will listen to you. So, interesting. Here's one. Not given to much wine. Do not get drunk on wine, that's the Ephesians passage, which leads to debauchery. Instead, be filled with the Holy Spirit. Now, that brings up a question for me. What about a recovering alcoholic? If somebody has come to Christ and they are, they don't refer to themselves as healed. One of my good friends is a recovering alcoholic and says you take one day at a time. Could somebody like that ever be an elder? I want to say with a resounding yes, answer that question. I picture one of the people who's had a huge impact in my life. His name is Brennan Manning. He was an Episcopal priest. He's now with the Lord. But as an alcoholic, he wrote a marvelous book called The Ragamuffin Gospel, which he talks about all of us being ragamuffins coming to Jesus and he remaking us. And so somebody who just taught me a great deal about grace, about trusting God, about your life being useful. And I think of some of the recovering alcoholics that I've had as elders, and my goodness, they have a sensitivity to life because they've often lost a whole lot in the process, right? In the process, and can do have marvelous ministry as elders with members of your congregation. And one of the elders in my church in California again, one Sunday asked to just say, I struggle. And so I want you to meet me after the service. If you struggle with drugs or alcohol, this has been a problem in my life. God's given me some grace to overcome it. And so I'll meet with you back in the social hall. And there were 12 people back there. And they started a group. They just started growing and growing and growing of people. Mm-hmm. And he became an elder. In fact, he became ordained as pastor. And had a marvelous influence. So, don't automatically check off somebody who is a recovering alcoholic. Some of those people, my goodness, when I think of them, they just have such...
I like how you put it, that sensitivity to life and just, a sort of understanding of what they've experienced that really helps them be a leader and minister to people.
Right. The one man, like I say, is a friend of mine yet, and he hosts an Alcoholics Anonymous group every Thursday morning, and just has been a person of great influence. So not given to much wine. In other words, you don't want somebody who is known to be somebody who gets drunk regularly.
They're in the thralls of the addiction. They aren't going to be in a place to be leading.
Right, and they're not self-controlled. Now, addiction to chocolate's okay, by the way.
No, okay. You're just giving that pass real quick.
Next one is not violent, but gentle. John MacArthur, who's a pastor in Southern California, said he easily pardons human failure. In other words, this is not somebody who immediately responds with cruelty or with anger, with violence. But I put down there the example of David and Shimei. Now, that is a story that we find in the Old Testament where David's son Absalom has rebelled against him, and David is now having to get out of Jerusalem to save his life, and he's going barefoot, and he's going with this deep humility, and there's this guy who has not been a David fan. Shimei was throwing stones and insults at David and his men, and Abishai, one of David's chief soldiers, said, "Why should this dead dog curse my lord the king? Let me go over and cut off his head," which David had the authority to say, go do it. But David responds, not violence, but gentleness. What if the Lord has told him to do this? What if, in other words, let's not find violence as the first order
right,
of business.
Response to this,
gentle people. Wow. When you think of gentle people, who do you think of in your life that would say, that's a gentle person, and that I'm attracted to that person because...
And once again, gentleness, that's a fruit of the Spirit. It's a beautiful demonstration of someone living out faith when you see that gentleness. It like just gives a sense of calm and happiness when I even think about the word gentle and the people in my life who have been gentle.
The next one is not quarrelsome. This is how Paul puts it in 2 Timothy. The Lord's servant must not be quarrelsome, but must be kind to everyone, able to teach, not resentful. Opponents must be gently instructed, and I hope it will grant them repentance, leading them to a knowledge of the truth. Now, in the political climate in the United States, which we are in right now.
All right, everybody read that one again, maybe.
And this is a challenge. It's a challenge, sometimes theologically. I think of a friend of mine that I used to play basketball with, and he was a pastor of a church in the same town I lived in, but he was on a different theological wing of the church than I was, and we used to get together after basketball and talk theology. And I learned you can do this without being quarrelsome.
You can respectfully talk to each other and discuss. And again, even how that word gentle is brought up again. Quarrelsome is you're quick to be judging, angry, violent, all that kind of stuff.
Right. And this is especially a challenge if you've got some theological training. Because in my life, my theological training, seminary training, in large respect, not totally, but in large respect, was designed to prove that we were right theologically on any issue and everybody else was wrong. And now we had the tools to prove them wrong. And so, now to deal with people with whom I don't always agree is a challenge. And sometimes, that can be, I think of a brother that I meet with quite regularly or call, and we are in different, let's just say, political wings of the world and church-wise as well. And so, it can easily devolve into, I've got to prove that I'm right. And, and I just had dinner 2 weeks ago with somebody, and they started spouting off about some stuff, and I started to try to prove that they were wrong and I was right. And it was one of those moments where you say, whoop, wait a minute. This is not going to win the day.
Don't take the bait on that.
And you're not going to. I've never... Nobody in an argument have I ever heard was convinced about the rightness of the other person. Not a lover of money. Just put that banner in there. Beware of the love of money. Where do churches get in trouble, particularly growing churches, particularly churches where things are going well, it often is in the misuse of money, and way too often it's on the part of the leadership that approve some things that you'd say, what? That's why if you haven't done it yet, you can take the course on deacons, and Abby has a marvelous session on how we've got to make sure money is cared for well. So there's got to be budgets, and there's got to be a supervision, and there's got to be looking at the books and that sort of thing. Because this is where the church gets criticized a great deal. So how do you define a lover of money? For me, that comes when somebody tries to use money to manipulate where the church, they think, should go. At my church in California, we had a man, and when I was called to go there, I was called by a congregational vote to come and be one of their pastors, and he sent me a letter saying, "Don't come." And all the reasons why I shouldn't come there and why I wouldn't fit, and no, da 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 da. Well, you know, God called me to come there. So I come there, and over the years, I had to deal with this man quite a few times, and he was not an elder, but he was somebody who had a lot of money. He was a multimillionaire, and so sometimes he would give money with all these different strings attached.
Yeah.
This is how it can be spent. This is what's for. This is how it's got to be distributed, etc. And we grew in respect for each other. I used to visit him on Saturday mornings every once in a while, and we'd sit down and have coffee together and sit. And I'd say, yeah, you know, we're going to have to agree to disagree on that. I didn't like the direction of the church. We'd made, you know, decisions about buildings, expansion, and then relocation, da 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 da. And he wouldn't give to any of those things with his rather considerable resources. He never became an elder in the church. Because it's one thing to have money. Now, interesting, his brother was also in the church, and his brother was also very wealthy, and his brother was regularly considered for eldership.
Mm-hmm. And you see that distinction between how their love of money lived out in their life. And that's when I hear the word lover of money. I think when you love something, you commit yourself to it. You are motivated in your actions by your love for it. And so it's like, again, you think about like your spouse. You should be a lover of your spouse. You should be a lover of God. If you're a lover of money, it's going to motivate your actions and it's going to affect everything you do.
Right.
So you can see that difference in people when money is their lover in that sense.
Right. Yes. So watch for that when you're thinking about money or eldership. Manage the household well. In other words, how is the money used in the household, living condition, children, education, attainment. Not just saying, you know, we're what's the old radio host used to say, came from a place where, you know, all 100% of the children there were above average. It's not saying that, but it's just saying when you look at the household, are they what Abby was referring to earlier, is kind of a model of, yeah, I want my family to be like that. That's a place I can go. And, yeah. And last one we'll consider in this discussion here is a good reputation about outside. A picture there is of the first church I served, the building, a little tiny church in Plainwell, Michigan. And I learned a lot. God taught me a lot in 4.5 years there, and those people taught me a lot. And I was talking about this businessman who had a bad reputation there, and it ended things for many people in the community to say, oh, don't go there. Now, the picture I put up there, I'm very glad the church died. It shut down, 8 or 9 years ago? And they had a series of pastoral relationships that were bad, and had, at that point, a bad reputation in the neighborhood, in the community. Building was shut down for all those years, and it just opened a year and a half ago with a new church plant in there, a city on the hill. And man, I rejoice in what I see happening there now, because there's a group that came in to start the church. They began working in the community long before they had launched worship services. They began caring in the community. And I celebrate when I can look on Facebook and see that they had 8 adult baptisms this morning. I mean, this is not a big church to have 8 adult baptisms in a morning and, you know, crowds of people gathering around for their stuff. But it took a long time. It took years.
Right.
For the memories of, you're right, the memories of what happened after I left and sometimes before I left for that to get a better
Right, it definitely
viewpoint.
Matters how the community views the church, yeah.
Yeah. And one more I see is on here yet. Knowing the word must firmly hold trustworthy message as they've been taught, so you can encourage others by sound doctrine and refute those who oppose it. Don't have to know everything. Don't have to know all the doctrine, but have enough experience with it that when the issues come up, you can address it.
You know, and that's, again, just a little thing on CLI. That's why we're so passionate about what we do here is, you know, we have so many courses that can equip on Old Testament, New Testament, and just, again, holding firm to the Word of God and being rooted in sound doctrine. And so, again, that's why it's amazing. If you're taking this course, you know that. You want to be in the Word. You want to be doing what the Bible is saying, and you're living that out by studying it more.
Yeah. So, pretty hefty kind of requirement, but, you know, this is what makes the church thrive.
Right, and then that's why there's that seriousness of this list, why it is so expansive, because, like you have already said, when something of this doesn't line up, if it's out of check, again, maybe someone's a lover of money, it is going to hurt the church, it's going to hurt the people. And, it's going to cause a lot of trouble. And that's why we have this very extensive list.
Yep. So we're going to turn now to what elders do in the next session.
All right.
So see you then.
So long.